extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, Matt Doyle. It's a Thursday, the first Thursday after midweek action in Major League Soccer. Coming up, all the action reviewed, including that raccoon that was running around in Chester. We'll also talk to Emil Forsberg ahead of the Hudson River Derby and go through all the rivalries with my man, Matt Doyle. Doyle, one, that was my third. Oh, I'm exhausted and off today. And
you know, also, I was gonna keep that between us. So I admire. I hope our listeners understand the transparency you're showing here as you try to work on short rest.
Also, to be transparent, I don't know if you'll hear it or not, but I feel like Charlie Davies today because there is landscaping happening right outside. Oh, there he goes. Getting a good mow on here after a heavy rain in the New York area. So I feel like Charlie, and we miss him so, so much. Let's go. Let's just jump into it. It's a short rest, but maybe a short show. We'll see if Anders gets his wish. What's the best thing you saw from Wednesday night in Major League Soccer?
DC have the most comprehensive and innovative scouting program in the entire league. It's actually been the subject of a lot of amazement around MLS and around the world. And we saw it last night in that NYCFC win at Philadelphia when one of DC's advanced undercover scouts got on the field during the game. The little raccoon, our friends Callum Williams and Kaelin Carr got to go full CONCACAF, man. They went from calling a messy game over the weekend to calling a raccoon game on Wednesday. Absolutely fantastic stuff. I thought they nailed it. It was clear that we were all rooting for the raccoon throughout that thing. And the good news, Kaelin was able to confirm the raccoon is alive and well after its adventure. So well done, DC United. Yeah,
4.5 to 5 full minutes of raccoon content was everything I could have hoped for and more on a Wednesday night. Just all the different moments that I can pick out of my brain. The moment the raccoon sort of lays down on the field and is looking around, waiting for pursuit. Just, you know, it's a little bit like watching the Columbus Crew center backs in possession, right? You just hold on to the ball and he's, hey, come pressure me. That's going to open up all the space around the field. And then when the trash cans came out, multiple trash cans, and this raccoon is just like, all right, I see your trash cans. Normally, I love to be inside of trash cans, but I know this does not include any sort of, you know, disgusting treats for me. And the multiple misses, the ability to create separation, the field vision. It was just an elite performance by this raccoon. And it's in a long line of raccoon content in Major League Soccer. You're talking DC United, and I'm guessing you still have your raccoon stuffed animal here. Yeah, bring it out for me. Let me see. Yeah, one of the best pieces of merch to ever be created in MLS. Obviously, RFK was inundated with our little friends. But do you remember last year at Real Salt Lake when the raccoon fell out of the ceiling and tried to eat popcorn in the press box?
Yeah, that was during Leagues Cup, right? Is that? Oh, I God. Think it was. Yeah, I think that was a Leagues
that
Cup
fits,
special.
That
one.
Fits if true.
Yeah, and that was Dunny, I think, on the call. Well, it makes sense. It was in Utah, but yeah, that was fantastic. The raccoon is, I think, more than any other, like the dog is the pitch invader of South America. Right. Correct. Like everybody knows it's not officially a Comey Ball tournament until a dog is on the field. And there was just one a couple of weeks ago that was absolutely fantastic. But the raccoon, look, it's beyond DC United now. The raccoon is the official mascot of Major League Soccer, and I couldn't be more proud.
A raccoon has broken contain in more ways than one. I was extremely interested in the moment when the raccoon was actually trapped under the trash can. And then you've got like 6 or 7 dudes surrounding said trash can.
What
being
now?
Like, huh. Okay, well, we got the raccoon under the trash can, but now what do we do? And it's a classic situation where you like catch a spider on your tabletop under a cup. You're like, well, now what do I do? And you slip the piece of paper under. And we were in the studio yelling, where's the piece of paper? Who's going to find a piece of paper? And they literally went and got a side ad board to slip under there and then trap the raccoon. I mean, it was absolutely captivating.
I want to say there was a lot of great stuff on social, but the absolute best was our guy, Napu Katie. Apparently this man had a raccoon as a pet when he was a child, and he was tweeting up a storm about that one. I like, at some point you're gonna have to get him on Extra Time to give out just general raccoon handling tips for the MLS community, because there was a lack of, I think, institutional knowledge on display.
1,000%. Yeah. And there were a bunch of guys that thought that they were, or at least in like intimated that they were going to grab the raccoon as they chased it around. And I didn't believe that. I didn't believe that body language
I would absolutely not grab the raccoon. I mean, that one, it looked healthy, probably didn't have rabies, might have had other stuff, but like, I'm not risking getting bit.
No. It's like, come on, you're not fooling anybody putting your hands down there. Mm-mm. Like, and then backing away. You were never going to go for it. Word out of the stadium was that the players had sort of scattered away from the benches as well to avoid the I mean, look, this, you can tell that this was the highlight of the night. It was absolutely amazing. Big thanks to the producers on MLS Wrap Up for letting me do like a 45-second breakdown of the raccoon run on the show. Go check that out here on this Thursday or before the weekend if you would like. The best thing I saw, crew back to doing crew things, Doyle. You know, we had been wondering for a while where the real crew was in Major League Soccer. We had certainly seen it against the entire city of Monterrey, but had been seven games for the crew without a win. And then they go to Montreal and they get it done, and they play the sort of soccer that we were accustomed to seeing. And in particular, the Marino Hinostroza goal was just like, oh, that is absolutely just a perfect representation of what we've come to value. And I have to shout out Steven Moreira, who had one of those nights from that right center back spot where you're just like, how and why is he in these positions, and how and why is this so effective?
Yeah, he is just absolutely made for that, for Wilfred Nancy's philosophy. I'm not even going to call it a system, for his soccer philosophy, and it gave him a second wind. It's not unlike our guy, you know, BWP with playing for Jesse Marsh in Major League Soccer. Like, it really sort of unlocked some things in him as a player coming over here 10 years ago. And it's kind of the same thing for Steven Moreira, obviously very different approaches to the game, but it's fun to see, and it makes me think about the game differently. And that's what I like most about our sport right now, is when you see something different and effective, and then you wonder, okay, where else is this going to translate? And is it going to change the actual meta of how teams conduct themselves within our league and within the wider sport in general?
What did you think of Mathieu Chouinard, his celebration after the penalty? Did you see this? He did the hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. And the timing, very interesting, with Olivier Renard leaving, with Chouinard reportedly requesting a trade, or at very least saying, yo, pay me or I'd like to leave. That had a little bit of the Eddie Johnson or the Dwayne De Rosario pay me moment, but not quite as literal.
Yeah, not as literal as that. I like it because it was pointed and yet open to some level of interpretation. But I think that very clearly things aren't perfect right now in Montreal. And I hope that Laurent Courtois gets a ton of patience and a ton of time in that job. We know that has not always been the way for Montreal with their manager. But they hired a guy who's who's trying to be a Wilfred Nancy clone in a lot of ways, and that doesn't happen overnight. So they got to be patient, and they got to make sure that guys who can play well, can function well within that system, like Mathieu Chouinard, and mean something to the fans and are proof of concept in terms of player development, that those guys are prioritized and made a core piece for the future.
Three straight losses for Montreal. They've got one win in their last nine games after that hot start on the road to start the season. After that Miami win, it's gone downhill a little bit. So at Toronto next, big Canadian Classique coming up this weekend. We'll talk about that a little bit more in just a second. But before we get to Gary Smith, he is the first head coach to be fired in Major League Soccer. I just got to add a worst thing I saw. That's whack, so to speak. The end of the Timbers-Quakes game, super whack. Very exciting, crazy game, goals going back and forth. But man, that call on the goal line to give the Timbers both a penalty and San Jose a red card for the handball, I just hate the call. I hate it. It ruined that game. It may have taken points away from San Jose that they could have earned on the road and got a third straight win. I cannot see how that's a handball when the arm is down at the side on the hip. If it doesn't hit the arm, it's going to hit the hip. It just is so frustrating to me. So we'll cover that on Instant Replay after match day 15, but I just had to voice my frustration on that one. All right, Gary Smith. He gets the honors that you don't want to get, Doyle, which is to be the first head coach let go. Gary is the only manager Nashville has ever had. That includes USL into Major League Soccer. It's been seven seasons since 2018, 239 matches, four straight playoff appearances, plus a League's Cup final. They won on Wednesday night at home against Toronto, 2-0. It was Gary Smith's 100th win for the club, and yet he was let go on this Thursday morning in somewhat surprising fashion. I know you and I probably didn't see this as the first manager to be let go coming. The details are thus: Ruben Muntali is going to be the interim head coach. He's the current player development coach there in Nashville, and they're going to kick off their second head coaching search in the club's history. Mike Jacobs, the GM, will lead that one. What's your initial reaction when you saw the tweet, when you saw the email come through? What was the first thought that crossed your mind?
I was surprised at the timing of it, because once he survived the first couple months of the season, you know, basically to, I want to say, mid-April with that terrible start, I thought, okay, well, he's getting time to turn it around now. And if he strings some results together, then he's going to be safe. And he, you know, to his credit, the team has strung some results together, but it, you know, upon further inspection, it seems much more about process than results. You know, like that, it was a 2-0 win last night over essentially TFC2, right? Given the amount of players that they have missing due to injury and suspension, John Herdman not on the sidelines, that game was ugly as sin. And the fans have, you know, the fans have asked for better. They booed Gary Smith in pregame intro. They, you know, were booing throughout the game, and they have been sort of making their displeasure known with their feet and their wallets. Like, that stadium was disturbingly empty. And when you don't have hope for a title, and I don't think they legitimately have hope for any sort of title this year, and you don't have hope for exciting new young players, which is they're never going to have as long as Gary Smith is the coach. It's just not in him to develop players. And when you play the most aesthetically unappealing, or some of the most aesthetically unappealing soccer in the league, the clock is going to be ticking. And he is the guy who you want if you want to build the foundation and get to respectability. But with that game model and with the inability to get more out of young players and turn them into elite pieces, he's never going to, I don't think, in the modern game, he's not going to be the type of guy who can put you over the top and get you to win something. The closest they came last year in Leagues Cup, they played really, really good soccer in Leagues Cup. And that has very much been an outlier if you look at every single time they've taken the field over the past 2 years. And part of that was, look, it was Dax McCarty's last hurrah with Nashville. And without Dax, they don't have a central midfielder that can possess the ball. That gets to the other part of the conversation, which is, this is not all Gary Smith's fault.
Yeah, absolutely not. We'll get into the roster in just a second. We'll talk about the decisions Mike Jacobs has to make now. And maybe the why now is another good question to ask here. I think the why now is because the floor, which we had assumed and bet on in predictions and just understanding what we were watching and what was to come for Nashville, hasn't evaporated, but like, there's nails showing. There's loose boards. This is not the team that just prevents opponents from getting in any of the spaces they want anymore and forces you to be hopeful crossers of the ball and then eats it up with Walker Zimmerman and Jack Mayer and whoever else plays in the middle. The floor is not the floor anymore. So if that guarantee is gone and you can't go chase a ceiling, which in grand terms is a championship, in more granular terms is just attacking soccer that your fans can be proud of and like to go to the stadium to watch.
And your players.
You don't have... Yeah, and your players too. Hani Mukhtar probably being the prime one among them. He has spent the last 2 years talking about, hey, we need a different gear. We need to be able to control games with the ball more. If you don't have either of those things working for you, then the future is probably going to be short. And that's not to say that Gary Smith is a bad head coach. He's just a specific type of head coach.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty clear what he brings to a team. And his record is good in Nashville. 100 wins, 77 draws, 62 losses. You made the playoffs every single year. But it just sort of feels like the end of a cycle. And it feels like the timing for Mike Jacobs, in my opinion, is like, hey, if the longer this goes on and the results are bad and you're examining the process and not just the head coach, but the overall build, the more the pressure builds on everyone at the club. Like, if you're a GM, sometimes you have to understand the right time to let a head coach go so that you can hire the next head coach and get into a new cycle and be the person leading that cycle. So I understand why the decision was made, and I'm sure, despite not knowing details here, that there's always internal politics involved as well. It's never as simple as like, oh, results, or oh, this person's unhappy. Like, it's always sort of a maelstrom of different things whirling around within an organization that leads to a moment like this. But yeah, it was coming.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Do you have a wasp in your house?
No, I have someone trimming the window right outside my door. All right. Anything stand out to you about what happens next and the why now part of this?
So we've gotten the player salaries, and we have the official, you know, from MLS comms, we have the official roster status of every team in the league now. The salaries come from the Players Association, the contract length and official status of whether it's an international roster slot, DP, TAM, all that comes from MLS PR. And you put that together and look, Nashville are not a small budget team anymore, for one. For two, they don't have a lot of flexibility currently. And for three, they don't have a lot of flexibility going forward because a lot of these contracts are through 2025, 2026, 2027, even for some of them. So it doesn't feel like a quick rebuild. That said, you look at Randall Leal, he's on a big number for this team, and he has not delivered in any way, shape, or form. And with the other new rules that are being reported, that I think Tom has had over at The Athletic and a couple other places have had it now as well, that each team will get an extra buyout and that every team will get access to all three U22 developmental or U22 slots, regardless of the status of the DPs on the roster. There's a pretty clear path to me. It's you buy out Randall Leal this summer, and then you get two playmakers, U22 playmakers from probably South America, but I don't know, maybe the French second division, something like that. And that alone can be enough to change a team's fortunes, because I still like the bones of this team. I still think this team is very good up the spine, but they need more juice in terms of ball progression through midfield, and they need one more creator. And within all of that, they need a game model that prioritizes the ball just like 15% more. Nobody here is saying that they need to be the Columbus Crew, but they need to look more like the team they were during the League's Cup last year and during, I think, their best season in 2021 than they have over the past couple of regular seasons. So it's a tight path, right? It's very narrow margins. They probably need to hit on two U22 signings, and then they need to have a coach who will develop and play those players. But we see teams do that all over the league. Like, look who's at the top of the West right now. It's RSL. Nobody thought that they were going to be in this position, but they are because they develop their players. And that's what's been missing more than anything else from Nashville over the past 4 years.
There have been some developmental moments. I want to give Gary Smith some credit there. I mean, Jack Mayer has developed, though he's taken a step back this year. I think Schaffelberg has developed under this coaching staff.
Neither of those guys is a starter.
Fair. Fair point. What I will say about Mike Jacobs and the decision to let Gary Smith go now, it's not just that floor. I think it's the ceiling, because to your point, there's not as much flexibility here to go rebuild. And I don't think the point here is to rebuild. You have Walker Zimmerman in his prime. You have Hani Mukhtar in his prime or late prime. You have Sam Surridge in his prime. The point is to be able to win something. and the direction they were going, they had no chance to do that. So while I agree with you with adding U22 players and trying to get a little bit more creative and progress the ball, like, number one is you have to get the best out of your best players. Hany Mukhtar is a defending MVP from 2 years ago. He's one of the best attacking players in the entire league for the last 4 years. Sam Surridge was supposed to be the guy that was his running mate to elevate Hany and to elevate the whole team and give them another weapon. And he has in scattered moments, but not with any consistency. So whoever comes in coaching-wise, to me, it's not about it being a rebuild. It's not about saying, okay, we're going to start this from scratch. It's about saying, we thought we were going to have a chance with this roster. That's why we invested in these players and these TAM players to go win something. We need a coach that's going to help us win something now because, look, you have Walker. You have Hany. You have Sam Surridge. You have a core, to your point, that has shown that they are consistently a playoff team. You need to take the next step, which is to be more than just a playoff team. And right now, Nashville don't really look like a playoff team.
Yeah. No, but not by any metric. And that's the most concerning thing, because as lukewarm as we've all been on the game model over the past few years, if you look at the underlying numbers in terms of the value of the chances they created, it was very high. Nashville were always, in the top 7-8 in the league in terms of expected goal differential, because they generated a ton of chances on the break. And chances via the break, via the counterattack, are the highest quality chances in the game of soccer other than penalties, right? And at the same time, to go back to what you were saying, they were really good at denying space and forcing opposing teams into hitting low percentage, low probability crosses that Walker Zimmerman and Dave Romney for a while, and then Lucas McNaughton and Jack Mayer would just gobble up. And that has gone away this year. And that is a big, bright, red flashing light. Because if you're not going to be dangerous on the break and you're not going to be impossible to break down, when you're defending in your box, then you can't be a low block and counter team. You just can't. And so the floor dropped out. The ceiling is still low. They need to do some surgery, and they need to get a coach who buys into the idea of getting some younger legs and maybe some unproven players out there, because what they have right now, it's just not good enough.
I can't see the next head coach of Nashville SC being a experimental hire or a hire that's like, hey, first opportunity for this guy at this level. Here you go. Let's see what you can do.
So
maybe I'll be wrong. But I this seems to me like you go get someone more in the Ben Olsen mode, as the Houston Dynamo did, and say, yeah, we need experience. We think this roster has the ability to win this league, but we need somebody to elevate them and who has a little bit more of a track record of a play, of just playing more creative, progressive soccer.
So full transparency here. It's a show for transparency, folks. We were talking about this on the pre-show, and the name that we all kind of realized after 3 minutes was our colleague now, Gio Savarese. Because Gio keeps the floor high, right? The game model is not vastly different than what Gary Smith has had for his blueprint in Nashville over the years. But Gio has had more success. He had more success in Portland, getting to 2 MLS Cups and winning MLS's back in 2020. I don't think is the greatest developer of young players, but he certainly had some success with that. And the most important thing is he got buy-in from his best players. He got buy-in from Valeri and Chara and Sebastian Blanco, and putting those guys in a position to succeed led to success. So if you're right and they're not going to go experimental, I mean, Gio Savarese seems like a pretty obvious choice. Let me ask you this. Would you consider a proven coach from USL Championship or MLS Next Pro to be experimental? Cameron Knowles has coached in MLS Next Pro. He got his cup of coffee at the start of the season with Minnesota, did pretty well. Miles Joseph got 10 games with Portland down the stretch last year. They had that team humming. Eric Quill at New Mexico United. Danny Cruz, best young coach in America right now at any level, 34 years old with Louisville City. There's some names out there if you're willing to go in that direction.
No doubt. I mean, I think that's a possibility. I wouldn't bet on it personally. I mean, I think you can look around and find some other former MLS managers floating around too. I don't know if Ronnie Dyla wants to come back to MLS. I don't know if Nashville is the place that Ronnie Dyla would want to go. Bob Bradley, I know he's having a good time in Norway, but you know, if he had a long-term deal in Nashville and he thought, hey, the ceiling is high, maybe that would be a place that he could end up. Bruce Arena, David Moyes. I think I just read that David Moyes is not going to be sticking around in the Premier League. Maybe he goes the Dean Smith path. I don't know. But I think you have to search far and wide if you're Nashville. And I just keep coming back to this roster and the expectations, and the reason why you let Gary Smith go is because you want to reach another level. And to me, that says we're probably going to go with somebody we trust and somebody we think has the experience to walk in and make things better pretty quickly. Because again, I mean, the pressure is not just on Gary Smith. I mean, he was the one that paid the price in this sense, but when you fire your head coach, the pressure is on everybody. It's on the entire squad. It's on Mike Jacobs in the front office. It just means that the results are not good enough. And inevitably, if the results stay don't good enough, then that means more changes. So I think you gotta look at experience, in my opinion.
I just want to say this one more time, just because it's important to me that I think people need to understand this. You don't get to the next level in MLS without developing players. Whether it's draft picks or homegrowns or young signings from abroad, you have to be able to develop those players. Even Miami's doing it. Cincinnati got to where they are because Pat Noonan has done such a phenomenal job over the past 2.5 years of developing players. Wilfred Nancy won MLS Cup and might win CONCACAF Champions League, liberally using MLS Next Pro players, sticking them into that roster time and time again in high leverage moments and getting them to deliver, getting them to improve individually, which then improves the team. Pablo Mascherani has been masterful this year at RSL, and that team's now at the top of the Western Conference. So to get to that next level you're talking about, Weeby, whether it's Gio Savarese or Danny Cruz, or Nashville's not going to take a step forward. And in fact, with the floor dropping out, they might just end up outside the playoffs for a few years to come.
Currently outside the playoff line in 10th, Nashville, 14 points from 12 games, -3 goal differential, -4 expected goal differential. Gary Smith pays the price. After 100 wins with Nashville and a really great run with the club, his time is over with them.
By the way, we'll see. We should say, I expect to see Gary Smith back in MLS at some point. I think for a team that ends up in a bad situation at the end of the year. And
if you were the Chicago Fire right now.
Yeah.
I mean, just right now, that's actually a pretty good hire for you, just to raise the floor, to see if you can get the most out of a couple attacking players to simplify the game. I mean, look, I think Gary Smith will be okay. He's an MLS Cup winner, had 7 great years with Nashville, and this era has come to a close. All right, let's talk Hudson River Derby real quick, then we'll get to Emil Forsberg. Big week right now for the New York Red Bulls. Beat the Revs, beat DC United, kind of whooped them both, and now they go to New York City at Citi Field on the weekend. What are the Red Bulls proving to you after that Miami loss?
I mean, they just keep reinforcing the take that we all have, that this is a really good team that is going to sort of be in the mix for, at the very least, a home playoff spot, or, you know, a home field advantage in the first round of the playoffs, and possibly sneaking into that top two in the Eastern Conference. They've changed the game model under Sandro Schwartz. You know, they're the low block and sort of transition team. They don't press much at all. They still do it in like little 5 or 10 minute bursts during the game, but you can't call them a high pressing team. They hit like exponentially fewer long balls, so they still have that club in the bag. But when they win the ball, they go direct. They keep the ball on the ground. They attack from odd angles. They release the central midfielders. The fullbacks are involved, but not as much just get to the final third and whipping across as they have been. They're a good team, man. They're still a piece short, but they're a good team.
They bludgeoned DC United in transition. Just absolutely beat their heads in. And that was something that DC knew was an issue for them and knew would be an issue in this game as well. If you think back to a lot of the goals that DC has given up and the results they've dropped, you can kind of see the scene in your head, you know, as you sort of put all those goals together of a lot of space in behind the back line, quick moves over the top, direct, go straight to goal, and DC either losing the ball in bad spots or just not having good rest defense to deal with a direct ball. And that was this game in a nutshell. Last Manuel had one of the goals of the season so far. Credit to him. The coffee shops in Brooklyn are buzzing today. But it was really, really about the transition game. And now on the flip side, New York City, Nick Cushing was under big pressure, and that pressure has evaporated, Doyle. 5 wins in 6 games. They go to Philly and beat the Union, hand the Union their 4th straight loss at home. And that sets up one of the more delicious New York rivalry matches, Hudson River Derbies, that we've had in a while. It seems like both teams are sort of edging toward, hey, we're good, and that's the magic recipe for a rivalry game to go off.
Yeah, and you know, they've been pretty okay, both teams, over most of the last few years. But for whatever reason, the shine, I don't want to say the shine came off the rivalry, but it hasn't felt as high stakes.
Not as intense.
Yeah. Since,
you know, when it was like the BWP Sasha group, when it started, it was just, it was so inherent. It was like, oh my God, this is going to be incredible. And then the dominance of the Red Bulls sort of pushed New York City in a corner. Then Tati and their championship pushed the Red Bulls back the other direction. And then it's sort of been sitting in equilibrium.
Yeah, and hopefully, like, I mean, hopefully with both teams now where they are in the standings, and hopefully with, you know, both game models having changed a little bit. I mean, NYCFC is a sort of a low blocking counter team now too, which is like wild. I still can't quite wrap my head around it. Hopefully it brings a little bit more juice to it. Also worth noting, there hasn't been a Hudson River Derby in which both teams scored since 2021. So it's been a long time. Yeah, it's been a long time since the game had a real shootout feel. And I think both these teams are a little bit more comfortable in attack than defense right now. So hopefully, I mean, I would like a 4-3 game in this one.
I would take it as well. Let's see what Emma Forsberg thinks. We'll be back right after this interview. It's our pleasure to welcome Emil Forsberg to Extra Time, new designated player for the Red Bulls, but you know his career very, very well. Emil, thank you for joining the show.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
I got to imagine, man, you're a little bit tired. We're recording on Thursday morning, but it's been a decent start to a very busy week for New York Red Bulls. 2 victories. What worked so well last night against DC United?
First of all, I think our defense, our structure, our work against the ball was very good. You know, when you play against DC, they're going to put a lot of long balls on Benteke, where he is brutal. But I think we defended very well. And after we scored that wonderful 1-0, I think the game opened up in the second half, and we could... We destroyed them on counters, I would say, where we are very sharp. So I think the game plan worked perfectly. And good week. A win against Vancouver, win against win against New England, a win against DC now. And let's go for a perfect week on Saturday.
Hudson River Derby coming up for you guys. That's a big one. It's away. Before we get to that, I have to ask you about Elias Manuel's goal. I mean, that is just to have the vision and then to execute the vision. That's spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fantastic player. I think he's developing very well, even though he haven't played so much in the recent time. You can see him training, working hard, want to get better. And I think this is the kind of mentality that we got to have. And I think we could see now in the last 2 games, guys coming off from the bench and having an impact straight away. And I think that's so important. And it gives the guys confidence as well to, even if you're not starting, you can come in, you can make an impact, and I think that's important for us as a team as well.
So you have choices. Sandro does up top. It's one striker. It could be Van Zier. It could be Manuel, but it seems pretty clear that it's going to be Lewis Morgan. And he said after the game, I've been waiting to play the number 9 in this league for a while. People didn't know what I could do. What makes him so good in that role for you guys?
Yeah, I had to come here so we can move him up front. that was good. No, I mean, he's a clever striker. He makes those runs. You could see that goal against New England as well, when he comes from behind, sneaks in a little bit. I mean, he's fantastic in that way, and he has a very good finishing, understands the game so well. So I'm not surprised. I'm happy for him. He's back in a perfect shape. and is playing as the best himself now.
Hudson River Derby coming up this weekend. What makes a rivalry good from a player's perspective? This is your first in this rivalry, but generally for you, what makes a rivalry good and fun as a player?
I mean, I think it's just fun that you want to desperately win. You want to win over that team who's your rival. And as you can see now in the table where they are and where we at. So, I mean, it's going to be a good game, and it's a lot of intense, a lot of emotions, a lot of feelings. And I think that's just the way you want it to be. I'm looking forward to it. My first one, like you said, and it's going to be good. Hopefully we can finish it off with a win and a perfect week.
Could be a true New Yorker and just take the subway all the way over to Queens, huh?
Yeah, maybe I do that, huh?
What is Red Bull Soccer in your mind? You have so much experience within this organization. Help people that maybe don't have a great grasp understand what it is like to play in this system.
I mean, it's a lot of intensity. It's a lot of hard work against the ball, winning the ball, a lot of sprints, but I would say intensity. And I think we had a saying in Leipzig as well that intensity is our identity. And I think that's the way it is. You got to be intense. You got to work hard. You got to get those sprints in. But I think what we've done fantastic now with us, with Sandro, is that we got both worlds. I think we're playing very good soccer, but we're also very intense against the ball and with the ball. And like you could see now against DC, the way we countered on them, the goals we scored, I think we can do both things. And we're still trying to develop it. But I think that's the kind of way we want to play. And that's the Red Bull way as well, to be compact, work hard against the ball. But when you get the ball and you can go into transition, you do it on maximum speed and you play the ball forwards and you score those goals. And I think we did that very well against DC.
I've been impressed and a little bit surprised by Sandro Schwartz. Maybe it's Americans, you know, having an image of what Germans are like in our mind is sort of intense and, you know, very serious. And Sandro has that side to him in the chats I've had, but he's also a little bit goofy. He's kind of a funny guy. Well, what's he like to work with?
No, he's amazing to work with. It's my first time with Sandro, but I knew him a little bit before. But I think we have a fantastic chemistry, me and him, but he and the team as well, and the staff with Volkan, Vedu, and Dome, and everybody, Tony, everybody that's working hard. I think we created a great chemistry, and we said that from the beginning when we came, me and Sandro and everybody, that we want to create a new mentality, bringing the guys forward, believing in ourselves. And I think we have done very well on that part, and I think the guys are feeling it as well, that we are onto something good here. And we're going to keep working hard, keep staying humble. Every training is a chance to get better, and I think this kind of mentality is what makes us good at the moment, but we know we can't relax. So we got to keep pushing, keep believing in ourselves, and keep making ourselves better.
How do you describe MLS, the league and the level, and, you know, sort of the day-to-day to your friends or former teammates back in Germany and Sweden? I would assume a lot of people are curious. Just how are things going for you?
I think more than people here in America thinks, it's a lot of people curious about the MLS and how it's going, how it's developing. A lot of players are asking me, a lot of friends. So, I mean, for me, it's a fantastic league. I think the level is good. The level is getting better. It's a lot of fun to be here. I think they're putting in an effort now to get better in every way, around the pitch, in the pitch. So, I mean, for me, it's fantastic to be here. And that's what I've said to my friends as well. I think I'm very happy to be here. It's a fantastic opportunity. The league is getting better. I think the quality of the league, the players are getting better, and it's already good. So, I mean, it's a lot of fun.
Okay, so we have Messi and friends, Emil. Hugo Lloris apparently helped recruit Olivier Giroud. So you got people hitting you up, man. Sporting director. Yeah, who's coming over? Who are you trying to convince?
I'm taking over Jochen's job here now in New York. So, I mean, I got some couple of guys coming in, maybe. Let's see.
Who do you think would fit? Whether it's realistic or not, they're calling you or not, like in a dream world, who would you like just to see in the league? Not necessarily with Red Bull, but just in MLS.
Oh, I mean, I think there's a lot of good players out there who can fit in the league. But it's hard to say now a specific name, because everybody's in the top of their career at the moment. But I think like a guy like Erling Haaland will fit perfectly here when he's up for it. Kevin De Bruyne as well. And now we're probably going to have Marco Reus coming here. So, I mean, we've got a lot of good names coming here. Yeah, you guys have to wait and see who comes to the New York Red Bulls.
We'll let that rumor mill churn, man. Those are some good names. Those are some good names. Look, I said Messi in Miami, and we got to talk about it. Can you describe to me what happened against Miami in your perspective?
I think we played against a fantastic team. I think we played the first half that was really good. I think we did really well. We did what we said we were going to do. And then in the second half, we gave away two goals too quickly. And I think we got a little bit too distracted by that. It was a little bit of a roller coaster in our team. We had the defense wanting to stay down a little bit, and while the offense was saying, yeah, but we have to score. And the distances between those two was a little bit too wide. And then when you have guys like Suarez and Messi and the quality of these guys, it can go that fast. So, I mean, it was a lesson for us. But I think we learned well. We bounced back fantastic from that with two straight wins. And now we're looking for the perfect week against the NYFC, and I think we have a good chance. But we learned from that game, and we know what these players can do with Messi and Suarez and that team with Busquets as well, controlling the game. So, I mean, it was a good lesson for us, but I think we bounced back on a perfect way, and we're going to keep going.
Give the teams around the league some intel, man. You guys want to finish atop the East. How do you beat Messi? You need somebody to beat Messi in Miami, right?
Yeah, no, I think we beat him. Okay, he wasn't there in New York, but it's going to be hard. I mean, he's the greatest player in the history. So, I mean, it's always going to be difficult, but we can do it as a team, maybe. I think it's the most important thing is to stay together, and then we will see. I mean, in playoff games, everything can happen. If they have their day or we have our day, I mean, it's going to be difficult. They have a fantastic team. So, I mean, it's a long way to go. We still have a couple of games to play before we play them. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be good. We have to stay on our path, believe in what we do, and let's see.
Do you like the playoffs? The idea of going into the playoffs to win a championship?
I mean, it's going to be exciting. I mean, I had it in Champions League when we played the semifinals and the quarterfinals. So, I mean, it's different, and I like those kind of games. So, I'm excited for sure.
So I don't know how much you know about the history of New York Red Bulls, but there is a curse of Curricula, and it's been throughout the entire history, no MLS Cup. Can this team do the unthinkable for Red Bulls fans? Can this team win MLS Cup? Is that in the bag for this club?
I mean, it's hard to speak on, but of course, that's my goal when I came here was to win. So, I mean, I want to win it. I think it's possible to win it, of course. I'm here to win, so... And I think the guys also realizing now that we are a fantastic team, we're developing well, we're doing the right things, we're staying humble, but we keep working hard. And I think we have a good chance if we keep believing in ourselves and keep working hard, of course.
Belief, number one, you got to have it.
For sure.
Tell me about why now for you in MLS and New York Red Bulls. What was this the right time in your life and career to make the move?
I think it was just, I've been 9 years in Leipzig. I think I had a fantastic time. I made my mark there, and I felt like it was time to do something else. And I was also very grateful towards the club and the way we came to this conclusion. And I just felt that I always had an eye for MLS. And I think it's a fantastic league, like I said, and it's developing well. And then I've been in the club for so long, so I think it felt natural to make that step to come here and help this team because, like you said, they made the playoffs for a lot of times, but I think it was time for me to come here trying to bring some new energy in, new mentality, and just trying to keep the intensity and pushing the guys forwards. And that challenge excited me and wanted me to come here.
I've never been to Leipzig. I've lived in New York City for almost 15 years now. For me, it's the best city in the world, no doubt about it. But what's an ideal day in New York City like for you? Have you had the time to explore?
Not really. I mean, I haven't been doing that much, just relaxing after trainings, coming home, maybe going into the city, have a coffee, do some shopping. But in general, I'm a quiet guy. I stay home. I don't do that much. Of course, New York is the city of possibility, the city that never sleeps. But I mean, I'm a quiet guy. I like to stay at home and just chill.
Yeah, you let the other people do the never sleep part, huh? You're getting your Z's. I appreciate that. Before I let you go, Emil, I got to ask. I looked at the contract. That's all public information now, thankfully, for those of us that love the league. 3-year deal and an option through 2027. Do you see yourself finishing your career here? I mean, that's a long time.
I mean, let's see. I love being here. I love playing for this club. And I have a first, how many months I've been here now? 5 months. Probably it's been an amazing time. I think we're doing better and better. And we're going to do better and better. And for me, it's, let's see. I love every minute. And I'm not going to stop until I win something. Let's say like
that. All right. Hey, first chance to win something in the Hudson River Derby this weekend. Emil, thank you so much for your time, man.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Huh? Have a good day.
Big thanks to Emil Forsberg for joining us. A really fun chat with him on this Thursday morning. I'm sure he's as tired as I am, but they'll get ready, get back to it for the weekend. Canadian Classique this weekend as well, Doyle, as Rivalry Week presented by Continental Tire rolls along. Montreal in a little bit of a slide, as we explained. Toronto FC, I'm going to give them a pass, a mulligan on Wednesday night in Nashville, just because the level of suspensions, and by the way, those suspensions could grow. The disciplinary committee are still looking at this incident that happened against New York City. So we'll see what happens with availability for Toronto. But if you're looking for passion, if you're looking for fire and fireworks, this one just always seems to deliver no matter who's on the field.
It really does. And both teams, they just appear a little bit ragged and frazzled emotionally right now for varying reasons. And that level of bubbling emotion tends to produce memorable matches of soccer, if not necessarily always for the soccer that's being played.
I don't even want to talk about what's going to happen on the field in this one. We don't even know who's going to be available for Toronto FC. That's sort of the way this is going. But let's do talk Rocky Mountain Cup. RSL, top team in the West? Yes or no?
I think right now, yeah. I think absolutely. I don't want to say absolutely. I think by a nose over probably LAFC. I don't think Minnesota is quite at that level. I know they've gotten good results, but I think they've maybe been punching or outkicking their coverage, if you want to use that terminology. Not that Minnesota's bad, but I think that RSL and LAFC are probably the two best. And it's interesting because both these teams have the ability to open up multiple DP slots this summer and make some adjustments. But like Pablo Mascherini, what he's done after the offseason he had when, you know, his staff was essentially fired out from under him. And like that is the warning shot of all warning shots. If you're a head coach, the game model is improved. They're keeping the ball on the ground more and they're turning it over less in high value spots. Young guys get their chance to get on the field, and a lot of them take their chances. Like Diego Luna played his best game of the season last night.
Easily.
Fidel Barajas has been, I think, really good. We've seen Andres Gomez take a step forward. Emeka Inelli, I mean, we raved about Emeka Inelli on Monday's show, and we will continue to. And like, that's what I'm talking about, man. Like, that's player development right there. But at the same time, he builds around the right guys. Like, Justin Glad is still there. And obviously, Chicho Arango is, you know, second in the MVP race right now. And if Messi misses a few more games, maybe Chicho goes back to first in the MVP race. Like, figuring out how to build a squad with that level of flexibility and adaptability with regard to the personnel, and then adaptability with regard to how you're actually going to play. Because remember, this was all supposed to be built around Pablo Ruiz and that left foot. And last year it was built around him. And when he got injured last year, RSL went into a tailspin. They had no idea how to play. Well, Ruiz comes back healthy to start this year, gets injured again. And there's no tailspin. Like they've been able to adapt the way they play. And throughout all of this, it's Pablo Mascherini. So all the players buy in. Like he keeps that. Like Zach McMath got rotated. Like Zach McMath has been really good this year. He's a veteran goalkeeper. He got rotated out of the squad last night. So Gavin Beavers, who's 18 years old, could come in and get minutes, and he pitched a shutout. And the veterans do not have a problem with this. Or if they do, it's the type of problem that just gets handled internally. And that is part of the club culture. Like whether RSL win the West or not, they are one of the great stories in the league this year. And I, like, at this point with Pablo's track record, I expect them to continue to be one of the great stories in the league this year.
So I'm going to throw a, an idea at you that as I was listening there, I just was kind of bouncing around in my head, which is we just talked about how Nashville is looking to find a new level, a way to reach a ceiling that they hadn't done before. I think RSL had been in some ways, maybe didn't get the credit for some of the things they did, but had a similar path to Nashville in the sense that like you had the X-Dog, you had this baseline of effort and of sort of organization defensively. And then you didn't know if the ideas going forward were, or the players were really the ones that were going to take the team to the next level. And these changes, not just made this offseason, but in new ownership in the last three transfer windows with the investment on the player side, Chicho Arango being sort of the leading example of that. But there's so many other examples throughout the squad of big transfer fees and now big performances coming, whether it's Vera or it's Gomez or it's Ojeda, et cetera, et cetera. And then you add different tools to help elevate your head coach, that being a new coaching staff that helped implement a new game model. And then in Pablo, you have a head coach that just sort of sacrificed his ego and said, okay, that hurt, but I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to be a part of this. And my best attributes are now going to be, you know, at the forefront, which is I'm an amazing leader. I'm an amazing motivator. I'm an amazing organizer of people around me. And I create a culture that's all about winning and selflessness. And oh, by the way, now the game model is such that we're going to elevate ourselves to different heights, even without the maximum investment that we could put in. Like that's the beauty for RSL right now is that there's still that next door to open. There's a DP spot to, you know, to open up by buying Matt Crooks down on TAM. They can get better. And everything else has opened up a new door in terms of the game model to like, not only could we get better, it's going to look different and be more sustainable because this game model means we're not as reliant on Pablo Ruiz. Now, I don't know if they're not as reliant on Chicho. That's an open question, but it just creates more of a, hey, next man up. And oh, by the way, when that next man comes, the expectations are so clear and the system is so, you know, ingrained in what we do that we should be able to keep rolling, if not at the same level, let's say if Chicho's gone, but at a high level.
Yeah, across the board, yes. And to me, look, Matt Crooks is a good player. I think he's a guy who could give you good minutes. The spot that you want to upgrade is that one, right? If RSL want to, you know, maybe win the Shield and come out of the West and maybe win MLS Cup, the difference between a Matt Crooks and Sebastian Driussi or Hani Mukhtar, like that's that spot to me right now is the difference for RSL. And that's where DPs are spent in this league, the 9 and the 10, and sometimes on the wing. They don't need to spend it on the wing with these the way these guys are playing because of their developmental culture that they have there. So we like that is where I assume Kurt Schmidt and that front office and all their scouting network, I assume that's where they're going to be looking hardest, because if they get that level of number 10 in with what they've already built, then we're talking about a team that is, you know, 2 points per game and a nightmare to think about trying to scheme for in the playoffs.
I like the Driussi Hani shouts because I do think that player ideally would be somebody who runs into the depth sometimes past Chicho, because yeah. Chicho likes to drop in. So it needs to be less
and
so.
And Crooks is that type of player. So it's clear that the front office sees that.
And Crooks has been good. He's been good. Agreed. Not great. He's been good. But that's the whole thing in this era of MLS. It's like, is it okay to be good or do you want to be great?
Yeah.
And when you have the spots open, if you constructed your lineup and your roster and your salary cap in a way that leaves you those openings, are you going to go for it? And through the last few windows, it's been clear that RSL have gone for it. So I'm very curious to see what the summer looks like. Meanwhile, the winter was good for Colorado, and they're fourth in the West. It's not always pretty. 1-0 win this against Vancouver on Wednesday, and it definitely was not pretty, but who cares? Rafa Navajo gets another goal, his seventh of the season. A lot of them are penalty kicks, Doyle. We can say that pretty definitively, but it looks like he's starting to round into at least a little bit of form. What's working for Colorado, and will it work against RSL again? It seems like finally the Rocky Mountain Cup is back to not being just a one-sided beatdown.
Yeah, I mean, the first time in 15 years that it feels like it's not just a one-sided thing. What's working for them is I think a lot of the stuff that we talked about with RSL, Chris Armas seems to be trying to bring to Colorado. Next man up mentality, development of young players, flexibility within the scheme. Because remember, they lost Connor Ronan, and Connor Ronan was their organizer. He was their
He's coming back now.
But the fact that they were able to put Oliver Larraz, homegrown kid, into that spot, drop Cole Bassett deeper into more of a box-to-box role. He was supposed to be a pressing 10. Georgie's played as a 10. Cabral on the wing. Like, it, you know, nothing went exactly according to plan for Colorado. They adapted anyway. They play hard. They clearly have buy-in. The question to me really does come back to Navajo, because he's on loan from Palmeiras through, I think, the end of June, at which point they have a buy option on him. He has 7 goals this year. 4 of them are from penalties. So he has only 3 open play or non-penalty goals so far this season. He's in the 13th percentile of expected non-penalty expected goals among center forwards. That's very, very low.
It's not a DP striker.
It's not a DP striker. The question is, this improvement that we've seen from him lately, and he has been, you know, generating more shots, more goals, and more expected goals, non-penalty expected goals over his last like 6-7 games. If this is sustainable, I think you make the move to keep him anyway.
I agree.
Can you negotiate a different buy price with Palmeiras? And if you can, then that gives further flexibility to add to the roster at other spots. It's for the first time. Look, I know Colorado won the Western Conference regular season in 2021. It didn't feel particularly real. And in the subsequent 2 years, it showed that it really wasn't. This feels a little bit more real. It feels a little bit more solid in terms of what they're trying to build here. And it feels like, look, man, like RSL went to Colorado and beat the hell out of them last August. Cole Bassett gave that quote saying, this can't happen again. I don't know who's going to be here, but like next year, because clearly people aren't like, things are got to change. Things change. Like, that was Robin Fraser's, I think, last or second to last game. And then, you know, a lot of the roster was overhauled. And then this year, they first Rocky Mountain Cup game of the season, Colorado won 2-1. And they are in control of the series now. And it has been forever since it felt like, actually, we might be competing on equal footing in this thing.
I've said it before, I'll just say it again since we're talking about it. You re-sign Hafa Navajo on TAM. Maybe you'll get another TAM player. Maybe it's a U22 player. Probably not, because you're trying to develop Darren Yappe. What you definitely do with that third designated player spot, because Cabral and Mihailovic are both senior DPs, is you go get a winger on the other side who's goal dangerous.
Yeah.
Can you find a Christian Espinoza?
Yeah.
Like, and I know that sounds, it's like, oh, can you find a Christian Espinoza? Well, most people don't. But can your scouting unearth a player like that? And then there's more flexibility in this squad just based on who's TAM players. There's not a ton of TAM being spent in this team right now. It's Vines, it's Stefan, it's Maxu, it's Diak, who's only on loan through the summer. And it's looking like, if I was the Rapids, I probably wouldn't extend that deal just because he can't break through, even with Oli Larraz being his competition. And that's it. You have 2 U22 spots open. There is room to play. There's room to find more quality to add to this team. And right now, Chris Armas has him at baseline, a very, very competitive level. And that's a good change for the Colorado Rapids. All right, between Cascadia Cup and Copa Tejas this weekend, which is more interesting to you? For Cascadia, you've got Seattle Sounders and the Vancouver Whitecaps. And we just mentioned that the Whitecaps just had a tough loss, and they're sort of settling back into, oh, well, we looked like we were really good, but maybe we're just an okay team. And then the other side, The Copa Tejas, is Houston and Dallas this weekend. Austin's in pole position. Dallas needs a win to get tied back up with them, and Houston's just chasing right now.
It sounds like you're more interested in Copa Tejas, so why don't you take us through that one?
That's not true. I'm actually more interested in Cascadia Cup, but I'll go Copa Tejas. Man, Houston
Dynamo. Such a good host we'd be. Like, you really set it up like you were
You know what? I'm good at selling stuff. Let's start with Copa. Houston need to get a forward in there, whether it's Sebas Ferreira getting healthy. He just cannot keep playing Kovalchuk. And they created better chances against Austin at Austin and didn't finish. And then Driussi killed him. But I'm more interested in this game to watch Musa and Ferreira together. We just have not got that this year, and I'm sure it's killed Nico Estevez. No doubt it's killed the players. But I want to see that big and little combination together. How about the Sounders? Did you read into that RSL loss at all in midweek, or is that just rotated lineup and the expected result?
Rotated lineup against a better team in a place where they never win. So I think that was the expected result. But this is a massive one for Seattle. They, you know, I consistently said on the show, and anytime somebody shoves a mic in my face, they've been playing better than their results. And there's only a certain amount of time you can do that and say, yeah, but look. And like, we're not there yet, but like, we're approaching that point for the Sounders. They need to start putting together performances and results. They need to start marrying the two. And guys like Rellery Diaz, Jordan Morris, who's been MIA most of the year, Christian Roldan needs to finish. You know, like all the veteran, Albert Rusnak, the veteran leaders, the guys who this is still built around, need to show that it's worth continuing to build around them. And right now, that hasn't been the case for Seattle.
All right. Rivalry Week presented by Continental Tire rolls on. Saturday, full slate of games. Come join us, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time for MLS Countdown, and then wrap up afterwards in MLS 360 in between. It's a busy slate. It's a busy time. These teams are feeling it, Doyle. I'm feeling it. I'm going to go take a nap. I'm not going to lie. I'm out of here, man. Thank you.
You don't want to do the Liga MX minute?
No, I don't got a minute. I don't got a minute, man. All right. Thank you to everybody for listening, and Emil Forsberg for joining us. We'll see you on Monday to break down the weekend. Have a good one, everybody. Adios.